The coral wanderer skipped over the waves like a smooth, flat stone. 200 yards off the starboard bow of the tanker, Flett eased back the throttles and switched on the ballast tank pumps. Faster than Pitt might have thought, the luxury submarine slipped beneath the surface of the water. Giordino stayed on the bridge with Flett, while Pitt dropped down to the main cabin and made his way forward to the bow and its big viewing port. Seated comfortably on a suede couch, he picked up a phone set in one armrest. "Are we connected?" he asked. "We have you on the speaker," answered Giordino. Flett read off the numbers. 150 yards and closing. "Visibility is less than 40 feet," Pitt reported. "Keep a sharp eye on the radar." He could hear the throb of the Mongol invader's engines and sense the rush of water under her keel. He peered into the green gloom and barely discerned the white foam that was sliding along her hull. And then her plates materialized out of the murk 30 feet ahead and 10 feet above. "We've got her," Pitt said sharply. Flett instantly threw the twin screws into reverse, stopping the Wanderer before she rammed the invader. "Take us down another 10 feet, Jimmy."
10 feet it is, acknowledged Flett, sending the Coral Wanderer on a course directly under the starboard side of the Mongol invader's hull. It was an eerie sight to watch the great hull sweep over the submarine. The beat of the propellers increased to the sound of a farm threshing machine. Pitt was an extension of Flett's eyes. Only he could make the split-second judgment call when the great bronze screws came into sight. He moved forward and lay down on the carpet deck with his face less than an inch from the viewing port, straining to see the magnetic explosive charge on the spar protruding from the bow of the Wanderer.
"Ready, Jimmy?"
"Say the word."
"You should see the starboard prop only 3 seconds after it comes into my view on the bow."
Nothing more was said as the suspense deepened. Then the green curtain of water parted in a white explosion of bubbles.
"Now!" Pitt yelled.
Flett reacted with the speed of a lightning bolt, shoving the throttles forward until he felt a jar from the front of the boat, and then whipping them into reverse, praying that his timing was on a thin dime. Pitt could only watch, helpless, as the magnetic charge impacted against the steel plates of the hull and clung an instant before Flett went full speed into reverse. The massive propeller came like an out-of-control windmill, beating the water of the bay into foam. From the control bridge, Giordino and Flett stared as the mighty blades pounded toward them. For a brief instant, they were certain they would not pull clear in time. But in the final seconds, the Coral Wanderer leaped astern as the LNG tanker's 50-foot diameter propellers flailed past no more than 2 feet from the bowview port, rocking the submarine yacht like a tree whipped in a tornado. A brief 30 seconds later, the water calmed into the Mongol invader's wake, and the throb of the propellers began to fade.
"Now is as good a time as any, Al," said Pitt, coming to his feet.
Giordino held a remote control in both hands and pressed a tiny lever. A loud thud sounded, amplified by the acoustics through the water. This was followed by a pressure wave that struck the Coral Wanderer with the force of a 20-foot swell before sweeping over and around. The explosion had blown an 8-foot hole in the hull of the Mongol invader, below the base of the propeller shaft, shearing it apart while the rudder mounting, already damaged by the heroic suicide run by the Coast Guardsman, became jammed in a 45-degree position to port. The propeller dipped downward on a slanted angle, barely held by the outer stub of its severed shaft, while the big turbine-driven engine inside the machinery compartment abruptly tripled its RPMs and raced out of control before the chief engineer could shut it down. With the port propeller still turning at full speed and the starboard critically damaged, the bow of the ship pulled slowly, deliberately, towards Staten Island, on a reverse course that would eventually return her to sea or keep her running in circles. Omo Kanai was stunned into absolute confusion.
Get back on course, he shouted down to the engine room. Can't you see we've come around?
We've lost our starboard screw from some kind of explosion, replied the chief engineer, anxiety obvious in his tone. Kanai's eyes swept the water. It was at that moment that he saw what looked like a private yacht cruising in the wake of the invader. There was a strange look to it, he thought. He was about to turn away, but then he stared with sudden understanding and anger as the yacht suddenly slipped beneath the waves.
Okay, Jimmy, Pitt said to the submarine yacht skipper. We turned her. Now let's put those big balls of gas on the bottom.
Flett set his eyes on the radar screen and the GPS to keep his course straight toward the invader.
Where do you want to hit her? He asked Pitt.
Below the engine room, port side of the stern. We put a charge too far forward, and the whole ship could go up, and everybody within 2 miles along with it.
And our third and last charge?
Same area, but on the starboard side. If we can put a pair of big holes in her stern, she should slip under the water quickly, since she doesn't have a deep draft.